Huawei's equipment hides some backdoors, a hacked Microsoft server exposes millions of records, and Samsung lights a fire in the form of the S10, but refuses to be responsible about it. All of this and more here. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Tech. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cutting Edge Tech episode 12. I'm so glad you could join me here today on this new and exciting episode of the Cutting Edge Tech. So, we're going to start off, right off the bat, with our old friend Huawei, who's been making the rounds. So, remember that I told you in many episodes back that Huawei wasn't safe for the infrastructure, that they were spies and everything? Well, a report from Bloomberg actually reported this, and The Verge came up with the article in itself. I'm reading the article from The Verge, and it says, just the title, this is just going to give it away. Hidden backdoors were found in Huawei equipment, reports Bloomberg. So yeah, that kind of confirms our suspicions that Huawei is actually a spying company. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, if you have a backdoor in an equipment, that means you're able to enter said equipment without anybody noticing. So, for those of you who don't know, a backdoor is a type of program that you put inside an equipment, and with that backdoor, whether it is a persistent backdoor or a regular backdoor, if it's a regular backdoor, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not quite sure on the terminology of this type of backdoor, but I know the one that always stays in there is the persistent backdoor. But the one that as soon as you implement it and the equipment shuts down, it goes away. I don't know that one, how that one is called, but that one, the regular backdoor, I'm just going to call it like that. Don't quote me on that. That terminology could be wrong. But that backdoor is, or any backdoor really, is one that you put inside of an equipment like a computer, a switch, a server, etc., etc., and it allows the creator of said backdoor to access that equipment without the user ever knowing about it. And like I said, that could entail spying, that could entail many types of things that you could do, manipulation of the equipment, insertion of viruses, etc., etc. You can do many malicious stuff with it. And between one of those malicious stuff is spying. So, shocker, our friends at Huawei are spies. So, it says here on the article, Vodafone Italy discovered hidden backdoors in Huawei equipment that would have allowed the Chinese company to access users' home networks as well as Vodafone's Italian fixed line networks, reports Bloomberg. Now, these vulnerabilities are from a little older, but the article goes on to say that it could have lasted much longer than the time that it says here. So it continues to say that the vulnerabilities were discovered between 2009 and 2011 in Huawei's home internet routers, as well as its equipment used in parts of Vodafone's network infrastructure. But there was no evidence that data was being compromised. And Bloomberg also reports that both the router and the network vulnerabilities continued to exist beyond 2012 and also existed in the company's networks in the UK, Germany, Spain, and Portugal. Sources say that Vodafone continued to use the equipment because it was cheaper than the competition and the cost to remove it was prohibitive. Here is the old adage, you get what you pay for. They specifically said that the Huawei equipment was cheaper to get. You were bound to get a crappy equipment. I'm sorry. Like, you guys asked for this. If you, like, first of all, because something is cheaper doesn't mean it's good or that it's cost effective. Because right now that they discovered this, they have to change the infrastructure that they have, meaning they have to spend more money in taking that old equipment out and putting new equipment in. So, What's the big take on this? Don't mind spending a little bit more for better products and products that are tested, that are quality tested, that, and also that are not able to say like, oh, this company's spying on me. Come on, guys. Like, you knew this was happening. You knew this was going on. And this actually surfaces due to the fact that Huawei is under intense scrutiny at the moment. You know, that with all the talks that they were spies and everything. Well, here's the evidence as to that claim. So, yeah, they worked themselves into this. Huawei kind of did this to themselves, you know? They thought that they could spy all they wanted and that they wouldn't be found out. And now they're being found out in a big way. Because now they're saying, oh, these guys are spies. And then they start looking at all the equipments that they are in the market right now that major networks have, in terms of, because they were cheaper, just like Vodafone. Like, Vodafone explicitly says, we bought them because they were cheaper. And here's what they get. They get equipment that can actually spy on them. So, yeah, you get what you pay for. So, Vodafone, you asked for this. Like, I'm sorry, you asked for this. And Huawei, your spying ways are being felt throughout the world. They're being found out, so yeah, you should probably do something about it because you're not looking too good. And like it says here, it continued all the way after 2012. It could have continued after 2012. And that's not good. Because it also says that Vodafone says that those vulnerabilities were addressed in 2011, but it also says that Huawei actually fixed those. But it also continues to say in the article that those fixes actually turned into something even worse. Let's see. Aha! Here it is. At the end of the article, it says, the same day, it says, last month, a UK security watchdog raised concerns over the Chinese company's basic engineering competence and cybersecurity hygiene. The same day, the Register reported lapses with how Huawei had patched a vulnerability in its routers in 2013, which later allowed them to be used as part of a botnet. So, what they tried to fix, they turned it into something worse. Because a botnet is something that you can use to actually help you with your computing power in order to hack a place. Because you're basically using the components of said computer. For example, right now I'm recording in a laptop, right? And I want to create a botnet. I have another laptop and I want to create a botnet that could help me in terms of hacking some other places. Like, this laptop that I have right now has really good resources, right? And I have another one that has really good resources, but I need more. So what I'm gonna do is that I'm gonna grab my computer, the one that I'm using, and then I'm going to hack into that other computer that has good resources. And I'm going to combine said resources, and then I'm going to go to another one and gather its resources, and then I'm going to another one and gather its resources. And once I have sufficient resources, I can go and attack something with as much resources as I can. Because I'm not only using one laptop to attack, for example, a server. I'm using four. Because I'm using the one that I'm using to gather the other three, and then I'm using the combined forces of all four to attack a server. So that's an example of what a botnet is. So basically with that, they're saying that the internet routers could be used as a botnet with that vulnerability fix in 2013. Well, vulnerability fix in big air quotes, because honestly, when Huawei says, oh, we fixed this, they didn't really fix it. They just made it worse. They just made it worse. People just don't know about it yet. And it doesn't matter. Like, they lost all credibility to me. And with this, it just hammered down the nail. This to me is the last nail in the coffin. They're dead. Like, if they don't manage to fix this, they're going down. And there's also a map here in the article that it says countries that have banned Huawei make up nearly a third of the world's GDP. That was something that Bloomberg posted on its Twitter page, and it actually said it's actually a map of the entire world with countries that have a stance in Huawei. And it says a ban, the categories are five. There's ban in effect, likely to ban, on the fence, unlikely to ban, and embracing Huawei. Now, according to the statistics in this photo, 32.6% of the world bans Huawei. There's a ban for Huawei in effect, and those countries are the US, of course, Taiwan, Japan, and Australia. Those are the ones that make up 32.6% of the world's GDP. Likely to ban are the ones that haven't banned it, but they're more than likely to do so, which are Canada and New Zealand, and that makes 2.3% of the GDP. On the fence. Now, on the fence are the ones that are neither for a ban or against a ban. They're neither embracing nor banning. And those countries are Belgium, the Czech Republic, Denmark, India, Norway, Poland, Sweden, UK, and Vietnam. Now, you may have heard that I mentioned UK there. And in another episode, I mentioned that Mike Pompeo, the US Secretary of Defense, if I'm not mistaken, that's his position. He said that he would limit the resources or the information given to the UK or Europe in general, if they don't do something about eliminating their Huawei equipment. And if this graph is anything to go by, the UK is on the fence. They're in a position where they're not banning, but they're not embracing. So if they don't do something about it, they don't take a stand, the US might start doing that, might start doing what Mike Pompeo said of limiting the amount of information that they get for fear of being spied on. And I'm not blaming them. Like I said, I applauded Mike Pompeo's decision to do so. And I still do. And those countries that are on the fence make 9.9% of the world's GDP. Now, there are countries that are unlikely to ban, that are not going to ban, or that are most likely not going to ban Huawei. And those are Argentina, Austria, Brazil, France, Germany, Italy, Philippines, Russia, Singapore, South Korea, Spain, Switzerland, and Thailand. Those are the countries that are most likely not going to ban Huawei, but there's a possibility that they could. But it's more likely that they won't. And there are countries that are embracing Huawei. By the way, the ones that are unlikely to ban make 21.6% of the GDP. And the ones that are embracing Huawei make up 19.8% of the GDP in the world, which are China, duh, because China is the one that has Huawei, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates. All of those people are embracing Huawei for one reason or another. China, it's obvious because Huawei is their company. Like, Huawei is based in China. And Indonesia, I don't know their stance on it. Neither Saudi Arabia nor South Africa, Turkey, or the United Arab Emirates. But in China, it's clearly obvious because they own their company. The company of Huawei is based in China. Well, duh, they're going to embrace it. But nevertheless, this puts you to think, like, if there's a company that has gone into immense scrutiny, and there's people that are saying that, oh, we shouldn't trust these guys because we have found evidence that supports that we shouldn't trust these guys. And later on, there's more evidence that comes out that you shouldn't trust these guys. And there's people that still embrace Huawei. I think it would have raised a red flag. And, you know, they should be more concerned about their safety. But hey, who am I to say? I'm just saying what I would do in their position. Like I said, I stand by what Mike Pompeo said, that if they don't do something about it, they're going to limit the amount of information that they give. I'm good with that stance. I applaud that stance, and I stand by that stance. So make sure to put some pressure on this, because Huawei, in my opinion, shouldn't be allowed entry into the 5G networks game. It shouldn't, because if it does, it could prove catastrophic. In my opinion, it could prove catastrophic. They could prove me wrong, sure, but I wouldn't trust it, because there's too much evidence backing that claim that you shouldn't trust these guys. I'm sorry, but that's my stance on it, and I'm gonna leave it at there. So anyways, we'll be right back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Don't go anywhere, guys. There's more to come. And we are back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me. Now, let's talk hacking servers. I mentioned in the previous part of this episode that a botnet would be used to hack a server, etc., etc. Well, more servers are getting exposed by the minute, and more servers are popping up that, oh, my data has been exposed on this server, or that a server that should have been very secure, it's actually been exposed for some time, or that it's been hacked for some time and the owners don't know about it. Well, here's another case of those. The only thing is that in this particular case, nobody knows who the owner of the servers are. I mean, it's hosted by Microsoft. Yes, these servers are hosted by Microsoft, but the owners of the owners of the servers, in particular the ones who rented the servers, they're nowhere to be found. Nobody knows who they are. There's no record as to who they are. So that's a bit of an interesting take. So it starts saying that it is scary enough that a team of Israeli security researchers discovered a massive unprotected database with the full names, ages, income brackets, and marital status on more than 80 million U.S. households. It may be just as scary that the researchers can't identify the owner of this database, which is hosted by a Microsoft cloud server and includes a cache of 24 gigabytes of data, a potential goldmine for cybercriminals. So let's break this down. So there's a few things that in here could be a bit, there's actually one thing in here that could pop up as to, oh, wait, what is this? So let's start by dividing this into segments. Okay, first segment, there was more than 80 million documents or more than 80 million records of US households that were completely exposed to the public out of nowhere. And it was found by a team of Israeli researchers who were conducting the investigation. The second part of this is that they don't know the owners of this database, which is hosted by a cloud server from Microsoft. I said server, but in reality it was a database. So they don't know who the owners of this database is, which is kind of scary, because that could be one of two things. Either no documentation was made by Microsoft, which is a blunder, or two, they managed to hide their identity in a way that not even Microsoft can find it, or not even this team of researchers could find it. And that is pretty telling. It's pretty scary, you know, just hosting something and then exposing everything all in there without any, you know, encryption or methods of security to keep that data secure. Come on, guys, like you can do better than this. But it also includes a little something that is very worrisome for people that know about these terms, which I will explain to you, and that is the cache of 24 gigabytes of data. Cache, C-A-C-H-E, that is a term used for what a memory is able to hold, because RAMs have this capacity, and equipments in general usually have this capacity to store some data that can be used for quick access, and that data is stored in a place called the cache. So the cache has the capacity for 24 gigabytes, and for just records that only hold words, that is big, because you can store millions upon millions upon millions of records. It's a huge amount of data to be stored in a simple cache. And just with that alone, if you leave the cache unprotected, and if you leave the equipment in general unprotected, that is a vulnerability in and of itself. And if it has a 24 gigabyte cache, which is usually for quick access, that is something that they can quickly get to if they get to the machine. You know, if they hack the machine or if they hack the servers, that is something that they can quickly get there. And that is not good. And this is something that really gets you like all nerved up, because right now there's no way to arguably say there is a hack-proof, foolproof, safe database or safe server that can hold my data. Because if people are just going to leave them exposed like this, or rather not the servers, let's be clear about it, the people that handle the servers or the people that handle the database, if they're not careful with the data, they're the ones exposing all of the records. Because a machine doesn't do anything unless you command it to, or unless you program it to do something. So it's not the machine's fault, it's not the equipment's fault, it's the ones that program it, and it's the ones that maintain it. It's the fault of those people. So if those people don't take the necessary precautions to actually make sure that they keep their stuff and they keep their data safe from harm like this, we got a problem. Like, we really got a problem in our hands, and we really need to start looking into this. We really need to start teaching ourselves to safeguard everything, to safeguard all the data that we can. The article continues to explain that the ones that were in charge of the investigation, the researchers were led by Noam Rotem and Ran Lokar, who teamed up with VPN Mentor, a site that focuses on virtual private networks and web privacy. And Rotem said, and I quote, "I wouldn't like my data to be exposed like this. It should not be there." And he's right. He's absolutely right. The data should not be there. Because if it is there, that means there's a problem. There's a safety problem. There's a privacy problem. There's a security problem, you know? But the speculations run more than this. It continues to say here that the site suspects that the database is owned by an insurance, healthcare, or mortgage company. Although it says that information you'd expect to find in a database owned by brokers or banks is missing. For example, the VP Mentor, which was the site that offered the help, or that the ones that were working with the researchers team, points out that there are no policy or account numbers, social security numbers, or payment types among the data. So there were no very sensitive data in terms of payments, social security numbers, which are really important. There's no important data that is being held there, so that's at least a bit comforting, but still, exposing so much data is very, very, very worrisome. While it is hardly the first time large-scale data has been exposed, think Equifax, Facebook, and numerous others, VPN Mentor believes that this is the first time a breach of this size that has included people's names, addresses, and income. That is true. Because at least in Facebook, what you usually think that would be exposed is just the usernames, their passwords, and stuff like that. But in reality, you know, unless you put really, really private stuff on Facebook, which I encourage you not to do, it's not that bad, really. Because you can just, I'll delete the account or report it and delete the account, whatever. You know, there's ways to manage it, but your full name, your address, your income being exposed to the public like this, that is worrisome, because that is very personal data. That is very private data. Like, you shouldn't joke around with that type of stuff, you know? You shouldn't joke around with that type of data. So congratulations to the team that actually found this, because this actually gives a light on a much more touchy subject, which involves the privacy of data from people and how the people that handle databases are actually handling said data. And this is something that should be taken into account when you are actually putting your data into the internet, into a database. Because this is something that can really damage you if done incorrectly or if mishandled. Proper encryption methods should be put in place. Many types of safeguardings and backups and those types of things should be implemented in order to actually protect your data from these types of things, you know? And just in general, don't put any information like this on the internet. Or if you are going to do so, make sure that it is with a very trusted source and someone who has been proven tested, that has, at least, since nothing is completely foolproof, nothing is completely hackproof, or at least has the good reputation of not being able to, you know, not being easily hackable or not being easily exposed to the public. You know, you should trust those that have a good, clean record, or at least have the best looking record, in order for you to safeguard the data. Because if you don't, then you're probably just writing it on a billboard or like, hey, this is my personal information, and just exposing it on the internet yourself. You know, more precautions should be taken place in these types of environments. So let's put our minds into that, people. Just a thought, you know? Just a thought. Anyways, we'll be right back with the Cutting Edge Tech. Don't go anywhere, guys. We have one more news to cover. Stay tuned. And we are back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me. So you might have recalled, let's go back to something that happened to Samsung a few years ago regarding a little known phone called the Note 7. For those of you who don't know, there was this phone came up as a response to a newer type of Note that it was much more powerful, more battery life, more processing power, more of everything. And it was something that was going to revolutionize and something that was going to be really, really, really big. Well, that turned out to be a huge bust because of the problems that it had with the batteries. It was discovered later on that the batteries were the ones that were a culprit to them catching on fire, giving off excessive heat, etc., etc. And they were literally bursting into flames in the hands of people, and sometimes they were charging and they would burst into flames, or they would put off really, really, really big heat that would be impossible to touch them without getting yourself burnt. And they decided to give a recall to those phones, you know? They decided to recall the phones and start from scratch, you know? Once they got that out of the way, they reintroduced them into the market for people to buy again, right? They issued that massive recall, they fixed it, quote-unquote fixed it, and then they threw them back into the market. Well, that didn't fix it, and they ended up recalling them and completely discontinuing the Note 7 line entirely. Like, after that debacle, Samsung lost millions and millions of dollars. His image went to the floor. The reputation for Samsung went to the ground. It was destroyed to the ground. And they've been slowly making up for it. And so far, they have been doing a really good job at making up for it, because they have actually not had any more incidents like that so far until now. So they recently released the S10, right? They recently released the S10, and I'm going to be honest, they're pretty cool. They're pretty good. I'd rather stick with my Note. Thank you very much. I like my Notes. Even that debacle with Note 7 didn't stop me from buying the Note 8, because I really, really, really loved it. Like, I really like the Note lines, and they're so convenient. But that's my personal taste. And in terms of the Note, of the Notes, there were no more debacles up to this point. The Note 7 came out, they discontinued it for that, then the Note 8 came out, nothing happened. I own one and it's still working fine. There's a Note 9 that recently came out, and then there's going to be the Note 10 that's going to come out this August, if I'm not mistaken, is going to come out. Well, now the S10s are the ones catching on fire. I'm not saying that there's a mass epidemic of Samsung S10s catching on fire, but there was an isolated incident in South Korea. And based on the reputation that these guys have, that should raise a red flag to them saying, hey, something's going on. But here's the thing. Samsung doesn't want to, accept the responsibility for this. And they're not going to refund the user. They're not going to do anything to the user. The user basically is on its own. And the reasons that they claim why the user won't get a refund or anything is because the South Korean company told AFP that the damage to the phone was the result of an external impact and not an internal issue. So they're they're saying that this is not something that was caused by us. This is something that was caused by the user. Therefore, it is not covered in the warranty. And if they push that, if they push that thought, they can't do anything about it. You know, the user can't do anything about it because they can claim that it was external damage. And truth be told, external damage can cause that to happen if handled really improperly. For example, if you puncture the phone, that could cause the phone to burst into flames because the battery bursts up. And just like you see with many batteries, that like foam batteries of old, that you put them in the floor, you puncture them with a knife, and then they start bursting into flames. Well, something like that can happen with a phone if you puncture it. If you puncture it through the battery, that could happen. You know, it's not out of the question. But unfortunately, this is not the case. According to the user itself, I read the article and it says, this week, a South Korean Galaxy S10 5G owner posted photos of the phone scorched beyond recognition. He said that he hadn't done anything that would cause the S10 5G to bust in any sort of way. And it says here that it burnt without reason. And this is a quote from the user. My phone was on the table when it started smelling burnt, and smoke soon engulfed the phone. The S10 5G owner, who asked to be identified by his last name Lee, told AFP. I had to drop it into the ground when I touched it because it was so hot. Then he added that everything inside the phone was burnt. And based on this information, if we are to take this person at its word, he didn't do anything. The phone just spontaneously combusted into flames, which is something like happened to the Note 7, that it could spontaneously burst into flames without any explanation whatsoever. So if we were to take his word for what he said, then sure, Samsung could do a recall, but so far it's just one incident. Just one incident alone. Of course, this is enough to set a red flag, like, hey, this could happen to me, and I have an S10, for example. I don't have an S10, but if I did have an S10, I would be like, this phone caught in fire. I mean, mine could be all right, but still, it gets me worried, you know? It worries me that Samsung could fall back into a Note 7-type debacle again, which would be catastrophic for them. But it's just one isolated case. And so far, nothing more has appeared. No more users have been reporting this. My cousin has an S10e, and that's working fine. But it's something that we should keep an eye out, just in case, if there are more cases that pop up, just in case, before this gets out of control. If more cases pop up, Samsung should be quick to actually address the situation. But for now, it's just one isolated incident, so it's something to look at, but it's not something to worry about, just like the Note 7. You know, this is something that just happened, that just managed to happen. For now, of course, you know, we need to wait until more of this happened, God forbid. But if it does happen, something a la Note 7, then we should probably be worried about Samsung's quality control, which is something that, after the Note 7 debacle, has been very good so far. But you know, there are incidents that could happen like this, so this is not out of the question. This is something that can happen because, you know, we all make mistakes, and maybe that specific one was faulty and we didn't know. Or maybe in the future we find more cases like this, and then we have a really big problem in our hands, or Samsung rather has a really big problem in their hands. But again, we have to wait and see. So far, this is just one isolated incident. We cannot jump to conclusions just because of one simple incident. You know, well, this is not simple. This is something big, because a person could have been injured. But, you know what I mean. This is not something we should take like, oh my God, this is something like the Note 7. Like, no. Take it easy. Hold your horses. It's just one incident that happened. Just one phone has caught on fire so far. If more phones catch on fire later on, or if more phones actually appear to be having this type of problem, then we should start raising an eyebrow and worrying about this, you know? But until then, this is just one isolated incident. We should be concerned about the person, but not the actual item in question, which was the phone. You know, at least the person's fine. It's all right. He wasn't near the device, and then until he grabbed it and he dropped it on the floor, but he's not injured. He's all right. So at least so far, we can say that no major thing has happened. Just that this phone just so happened to combust into flames. If something like this were to repeat itself in the coming days, weeks, months, years, then we should start worrying about this. But so far, let's just stay calm and wait at what happens. Wait until see what happens. Alright, so that'll be all for today on the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you so much for joining me. Remember to like my page on Facebook and remember to favorite this podcast here on Anchor. Thank you so much for joining me. As always, you know, there's more platforms for Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast, or right here on the Anchor page. So thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for the enormous support, for the great wishes, and the amazing critics that you have given me. You know, everything is appreciated. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for everything. Really, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much, and I hope to see you here next Wednesday. And as always, keep it techie, my friends. I'll see you guys next Wednesday. Cutting Edge Tech is a technology news podcast focused on the latest news that occurred during the week between episodes. The opinions expressed in this podcast are strictly from the host and should not be taken as absolute facts. If you'd like to suggest a news article to be discussed in the podcast, send it to me at cutting.edgetechpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear them. Thank you, and see you in the next episode. And remember, keep it techie, my friends.